Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you for turning out. I know it's been a long Congress so far. It's been a great Congress so far. A lot of amazing talks going on. That being said, let's dive in. So, observability is just contextualized monitoring. Change my mind. Oh, my thing is going to go slow. I'm not going to use this anymore. But hey, so my name is Obsidian, or Ben Stewart. I am an infrastructure architect with a specialty in software-defined networking. I have a blend of technical and strategic IT experience. My hobbies are I coach youth through the scouting organization in the Netherlands, specifically in leadership strategies and figuring out how to become themselves. I have a gripe against documentation of open source projects. This often is due to the fact that I love automating my house. I fail at this a lot. It creates some great situations. I'm a member of Milliways. We are just over there, behind the camera. Please come check us out at some of these large events. I bring a practical lens to today's topic, blending my experience within the IT infrastructure fields. But I have just enough frustration to hopefully make it interesting. So, observability is just contextualized monitoring. Within the field of IT infrastructure, we are very, very tool-centric. But I'm getting ahead of myself. I will be storytelling, hopefully, a lot of this through relatable imagery. The really important stuff is up there on the slides. You can probably tell I'm likely reading this from my own screen. Yes, you can have the slides. I believe they are already available. This topic isn't new. It's actually several decades old. It's not even a technical topic per se. We can learn a lot from our peers and from our friends from software engineering and software development. So I get the feeling that tools are being overhyped a lot from the people that should be trusted sources for our information. However, you likely already have a lot of the right ingredients, and hopefully after today's talk, you'll come away feeling a little more comfortable on how to utilize these properly. Let's unpack what I mean by that. But first, what do I actually mean when I say it's just contextualized monitoring? So there are three pillars to observability. There are metrics, traces, and logs. Observability is a measure of how well you can infer the internal state of a system from the knowledge of its external outputs. These are some of the external outputs: metrics, traces, and logs. Basically, it means that you have an idea of what went wrong, why it went wrong, and hopefully also how you can fix this. It's just monitoring, but it's with added context, right? It's just adding in logs and traces into tooling that you've already got. But as monitoring got more complex and the systems that we started to build got bigger and larger and more information stored in there, the infrastructure industry started to catch on. The tools grew more complex to support what we were building, and they rebranded everything to be called observability. To differentiate themselves from what it used to be. So we've now stuck in this loop where we're selling proprietary tools as silver bullets, but most of us already have the stuff that we need. So how did we even get here? Now beware, there be dragons here. The history of observability is buried under a lot of algorithmic noise. So here's the broad strokes. This is definitely not a detailed timeline, right? There are a huge amount of talks, projects, videos, seminars, papers. There's all sorts out there, some really good sources. This is just a couple of my hand-picked ones. So in 1960, an electrical engineer from Hungary, a man called Kalman, he coined the term observability as he was describing linear dynamic systems. Please don't ask me anything about this topic. I am not an electrical engineer. Fast forward several decades on, and two people, Loosely and Douglas. They published a book on high-performance client-server systems. This is in the mid-90s, right? They're starting to build these huge systems that they're trying to adapt and maintain. And they described a lot of what we now understand to be observability, but they didn't necessarily map it back to observability. So, another decade or so on, and we have Brian Cantrill. He wrote a publication in ACMQ, and he described the drawbacks of not having observability in software. That later on led to building D-Trace. And then in 2013 and 2016, the, I guess, formerly known as Twitter observability team, they had two very, very good technical publications out there on how they mapped observability throughout their systems. It's good reading, but this is how we got here. But then where even is here, right? How did observability go from a niche mathematical theory that had its roots in electrical engineering to a buzzword that we're all supposed to buy? So the industry's hype cycle has overcomplicated a lot of this. So let's take a look at how this, you know, works in day-to-day. This, I hope, should be very recognizable to a lot of people here. So you've got a bunch of tools. Now, these logos are all parodies of probably well-known monitoring tools to some of you. But the tool sprawl is everywhere, and the pain is real. So within the organization you're supporting, be it an actual enterprise business, an NGO, or whatever, you've probably got somewhere between 4, maybe 20. I wish I was joking when I said 20. And you probably started out with one proprietary product that was monitoring something that you know a lot about. It might be network, it might be compute, it might be storage, doesn't matter, okay? This proprietary product probably can't map or contain or monitor or observe everything within your environment, right? So there are blind spots and something falls over. It's probably something that's not in your wheelhouse. You probably didn't even know it existed until just recently, but it fell over because it wasn't in your proprietary monitoring tool. So no one thought to monitor these things, and it becomes your problem when it dies because, of course, you should have known about it. And then inevitably, there's now a grudge about that one time that that thing that you didn't even know existed fell over. So we have this plethora of tooling out there, and something falls through the cracks, and then we got transitioned into like a flawed decision-making process. Because it's the people that we support that then gather their non-technical peers around them, and they then look to fintech news outlets, research bureaus, and their own non-technical peers. Because heaven forbid that they actually listen to the organization that works with this on a day-to-day basis, right? I mean, why trust the people managing your infrastructure daily when you can spend your entire budget on research consultancy buzzwords? So, they go out to these things and then they produce a bunch of graphs. Is there anyone here that knows at least one of these? Hands? Yeah, I thought so. So, if you haven't seen one of these, the aim of the game here is you make a list of requirements and nice-to-haves. So you're looking for a tool to do the thing, right? All of them can probably do the same things, they just use different words to describe all of this. You want to get in the top right. That's where the really good stuff is, right? So, you follow this weird method that has a mnemonic name that belongs to a capital city of a country I won't mention. And you want to pick something in that top right, but then you get procurement involved, and it's their job to look at your requirements and nice-to-haves and say, that's too expensive. What about the one on the right? It's still a red car. It's still got four wheels. You can still put a bunch of people in the back. It'll do the same. I don't know if everyone understands cars, so I also put music instruments and games consoles there, right? But you get the idea. So you go through this whole process, and you figure out this tool that you want to have. Well, now you've got all of those tools that you used to have, plus another tool. What solution have we just arrived at? Not much. So what are we supposed to even do? You know, how do we break this cycle? Because just adding another tool into our toolkit doesn't necessarily mean that we are supporting our organizations any better than we used to be doing. Who says that we can add the stuff that we didn't know about into the new tool? And then what happens with the stuff that we still don't know about when that falls over and breaks? We need to shift our mindset, right? I said, this isn't a technical issue. So the solution is stop buying tools, right? Simples. You need to think about how you're using your current tools, and you need to think about why you're using your current tools. And once you've got down to that, you need to consolidate. Put everything together as much as possible, because the more you know in one place, the more observable your environment becomes. So get all of your telemetry, get all of your metrics, your logs, your traces, put them all into that one place, because it's the context in this one place that matters. So, let's look at dashboards. Everyone's got them. This is just a random example that I pulled. From my experience, I think it's a network dashboard. It says something about network bandwidth. I'm not sure what bandwidth it's trying to visualize here. I'm not sure what they think is accurate, whether we are monitoring network bandwidth of a specific port, a device. Stop monitoring for the sake of monitoring. Stop monitoring the stuff that matters to you and go out in the world and touch grass. Because with stuff like this, you're going to have an alarm that's set up to alert for maybe a device falls out. But is that really the thing that you want to do? Because like alarms for device failures are fine, but redundancy makes availability rates redundant. So let's go and touch grass. Speak with the organization that you're supporting. What's important to them? Whether you're in an NGO, an enterprise, an education, whatever, what is their core thing that makes them tick? How do they make money? How do they offer a service? How do they build a product? Start big, work down. Identify the processes that are key to them. Figure out who owns different parts of that process. Figure out what the dependencies are. If something fails, how long does it take until they get really worried? Is there a way for them to continue to work while they are worried? Continue doing this. Actually interview people. Build trust and identify what truly matters to them. This often reveals the missing pieces that you didn't know about, as I said before. But this starts to, build context around what's going on here. So these are some examples from my past. Air conditioning units that died because they weren't part of our own chain of events. They were part of a facilities contract that was cancelled. It's great, especially when your alarms start going off of storage units that go up to 73 degrees and you start losing hard drives on Christmas Eve. Cool. The one in the middle, it's actually a building management system. It's a little IoT controller for speed gates and doors. If your switch stack has a firmware reboot and that thing loses its network connection, but the port actually doesn't go down and up, then it'll just sit there indefinitely waiting for a network, quote unquote, to become available. It doesn't adhere to any DHCP standards that we have or know. It's just not connected. Default failure mode for one of these things is they just open all the doors and speed gates at 3 a.m. to let anyone inside that wants to. It's pretty cool. The one on the end is a telescopic conveyor belt. It's designed so that people don't need to do the heavy lift work and walk into a truck to put down boxes, right? These are often found in distribution centers. They are really good, except when the person manning them wants to go on a smoke break. It's easy enough for him to kick the emergency brake, and that locks the conveyor, which causes a chain reaction in your distribution center, and then the entire distribution center is down. That wasn't even a technical issue. But because we're not monitoring it, and we don't have the context of what goes on with a worker in a distribution center, it's still our fault somehow that the distribution center no longer works. How could you possibly not know? All of this just smells like context, right? So try and visualize the dependencies that you've got through the context that you just gathered in these interviews into the all-consolidated tool. Now, I know that sounds like you're going to be generating a lot of alarms or alerts or whatever you want to call them, but please don't alarm everything. The notification fatigue is real. We all have it. From social media on our phones to the inbox rules that we set up that mark as read, archive. Everyone has this in their notification chains. What's the point? Why even have alarms that do this if you're not going to respond to them in the first place? Focus on actionable alerts, right? Build alerts that match the context that you got from your interviews. Okay. So some of you will have been here to talk about free or open source software. Now, how can free or open source software help? I'm not going to get into the semantics of free beer versus free speech or Libra, right? Okay. Broad strokes, again. Free beer, I'm going to give you a thing, a beer, free. Free speech, I can say, by and large, whatever I want. Free software, I can do whatever I want with it. I can change it, adapt it, I can host it wherever I want, be it my cloud or someone else's, on-prem or not. This is what we're going to talk about. Don't stare blindly on the three logos that I've got here. These are just some of the available options. In walking around here and talking with some of you, at least, I've actually found there to be a couple of others that I didn't even know about, which I'm definitely going to look up when I get home. So how can free or open source software help? I said it earlier, consolidation is key. How do you consolidate products into something that's proprietary? A lot of the times you can't. So that's where these things help, right? They're vendor neutral. They have hundreds upon hundreds of integrations and whatever else available to you to put whatever you want in there. And they are very flexible, as I said. You can host them on-prem, cloud, someone else's cloud, wherever. These things will adapt to your needs. But they're not very good at data visualization. So luckily, you're all Congress goers, so you all understand Grafana dashboards. There are loads of them. Grafana is great at visualization. Just use that. But please don't stop there. It gets even deeper than just consolidating everything into your singular tool. So try to work with a source of truth. Unify configuration and monitoring into one place. This isn't, again, a single magic bullet, or a silver bullet, I should say, or magic fix button. This is proactive monitoring versus reactive. This saves time and effort in the end, and it's still part of your mindset shift. Oh, the dragon is back. Two caveats here. These are just things that work well from my experience within my tool teams and my environments. And not everything on this page is as free speech as we would like. Come talk to me about that if you're really interested. So when you start out on this journey, right, you're doing reactive monitoring. You get an alert, something fell over, it's broken, whatever. Try monitoring your current versus the target state. If you hook up a lot of your configuration beforehand into something like NetBox, for example, then your environment will already know what it's supposed to be configured as, and you can start getting alerting on the configuration changed, be it from sources outside of your control or ones within your control, or the other way around. It could start to alert when stuff isn't changing the way that you have started to configure it. So, integrate these source of truth and automation tools for consistency and further automation in your environments. And then apply the context retroactively. And that creates a truly proactive configuration. All leans into I want to define the state of my current system based on its external outputs, but now you're moving the external output to be the eventual configuration input. Observability is just contextualized monitoring, but that context comes from you, right? Don't just go out there and willy-nilly buy another tool. Don't even take my advice and instantly implement one of these open source tools. Really get out into your organization and figure out what's important to them. So the message here is that unlike what the industry giants around us are pushing to sell, it's not a product that you can buy. It's a mindset that you build. Yeah, I think that's it. The end is just a Q&A. Thank you. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you, Ben, for the nice talk. We have also some. We can also get some questions from the web. Use on the IRC or on Mastodon the hashtag 83C3 minus half. And in the web, do we have some questions? No questions out there. Do we have here for the Q&A session some question? Please raise your arms. Okay, here.
Hi. When you say contextualization, that's a bit about, is this relevant information for you? What are you trying to learn from that squiggly line on the screen, right?
Yes.
So basically, I learned a term called information, not data. Look for information, don't look for data.
Yeah.
That's that point, right?
Yes.
Okay. I think I can actually offer something. You mentioned the Kalman definition of observability.
Yeah.
I know that. It's a trait of a system, okay, whether you can look at it or not. So can you actually learn about the internal state of a system?
Right.
And basically what we're trying to do here is we're pulling data out of the systems to actually be able to look at it.
Right.
So that's that.
Lovely. Thank you for adding into this discussion. That was great.
Some further questions out there?
Cool.
Yeah. I don't see any, but
I have a question or more. Yeah, I'm interested in, you mentioned notification fatigue.
Yeah.
Can you a little bit elaborate on this and how to overcome it?
How to overcome notification fatigue? I touched on this just a little bit. So as I said, everyone has these mail rules on their inbox, right? You probably get tens, some cases, maybe even hundreds of alerts into whatever it is, alert@myorganization.whatever. A lot of people will, after a while, figure out which alerts are non-actionable, don't mean anything, or are otherwise not important. So they'll set up this mail rule that's mark as read, auto-archive, and then they'll never see these things ever again. If you just blanket that, then you're also going to start to miss alerts that are really important. So I said, build actionable alerting in your interviews with the organization where you were in. When you're figuring out what's important to them, the context, also figure out, as part of that, what's really important for me to alert on, and then set up alerting on that, and base that on the expectations that you have within your organization. Don't just immediately fire off alerts for something that might not even be working for 2 seconds, a blip. It's fine if that turns up as a warning in a dashboard somewhere, but it doesn't need to be a priority one incident with all hands on deck, right? This is going to be a different and possibly a long process for everyone, but it's part of the. It's an important part of figuring out what is important. The whole thing is about what is important to them, to what I'm trying to support versus what I think is important. Part of that mindset shift. Cool.
End of Q&A.
I have to add something to the previous connection. In my site reliability engineering team, we managed that that fatigue in doing two things.
Mm-hmm.
At the first place, when you are on call and you are getting an alert of a severity level which needs your action, which wakes you up, it's not okay to go to bed if it disappears. your role is then to find out why this trigger or why this alert was raised. And on the other side, and at our daily, we review daily the alerts of the last 24 hours, what happened, mm-hmm. and derive a ticket for it, and which needs an outcome, solve the situation, raise a new ticket to do a development enhancement, add or create a new ticket which, or implement a new monitoring mechanism which helps you next time to get the insight you are missing, mm-hmm. to discover what the problem is, and so on. And we did that very, we really tried to decrease the noise in the monitoring system. That was very useful.
It's practices.
I fully agree that.
It's practices like this where you also review, was the alert genuine or not, and what did we do to get to really nail down in that process of what do we alert for and what do we, you know, keep out. That's really good.
Zero acceptance policy for monitoring alerts.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm going to take that one away. Thank you for adding in.
Thank you.
Oh dear, more.
A further question from down there.
Thanks for a great talk. My question is, where do you see the difference between matrices and data analytics? Because let's say we have users using the system, and then you want some statistics, how much are users using the system? And like the business people kind of want some information, and some other people want other information, and like how do you make everybody happy?
Okay. Wow, what a question. That's pretty cool. I'm afraid I'm going to have to give you the non-answer of I cannot immediately think on stage here about that and talk about this with you at the moment. But I want to have that discussion with you at a later time, if you don't mind. What I think this leads to is how much data are you collecting? And I want to go back to what was said earlier, what was added in from another member of the audience. I'm going to have to ask you again. Could you just yell at me what it was? Yes. Information versus... information versus data.
Yeah, look for information. Don't look for data.
Yeah. So...
Don't measure everything.
But I need your contact details and we'll have a talk about that. I'm sorry.
Do we have some further questions, or if okay?
No hands. Hands? Maybe.
Here.
I think we're done. No.
Maybe not directly a question, but the biggest problem is, so if it's not about infrastructure, where you maybe have clear thresholds, but when it's about services, that it's often very difficult to figure out like where should your threshold be, or you mm-hmm. you cannot have a hard-coded threshold because you have some failure rate where you say, okay, this is acceptable because like it's happening, your service is working, maybe you need to investigate, but nothing critical, and at some point things just race, or you have like normal response code and suddenly are there at 100%, okay, then it's obvious, but like rates are increasing, and that can also depend like on user behavior. So like if you have a service with different usage and you cannot really predict it, then that's very hard, and I think there is no proper tooling to handle that, and even like all the stuff that tries to predict it, it's creating more noise than being useful. So I see that like you also have no idea on that, but that would be something like if anyone has a good idea or already found improvement for that, it would be quite interesting.
Tell me about it.
So that's our biggest issue, because we're there. I'm then always like telling our devs, okay, do alerts when you know that your system is in a state where you need to act. Mm-hmm. And all the other stuff, like a change in general behavior, you should see on a dashboard where someone just should look at it and see like if something starts to be odd, because they should know their service and should know what happens and what it's supposed to do. But to get this in mind and stop them from requesting alerts for everything, that's really hard, because as soon as an incident happens, then someone comes and says, oh, like, yeah, why did you not have an alert for that? Mm-hmm. And then you again end up in a circle, yep, just having more and more noise, and at some point you then just have to clean up. And yep, I don't know, like, it's always something that starts then after something big happening.
Yeah, you really need to be mindful of changing the mindset and stopping from falling into those pitfalls. As to where the threshold is, have you considered maybe not keeping that an internal development discussion, but figuring out what would the threshold be from business sponsor or whoever it is that you're trying to support there? They probably don't have all of the answers, but if you start in that process and work with them, you will get there in the end. Sometimes it could be even just fun figuring out, okay, how are these people using this thing in the first place?
I would wish to, but the problem is more that, at least in our case, from the business side, you don't get answers on that. Like,
right,
they even don't know themselves what they are expecting.
Yeah.
So like, they're like, yeah, can you not see that? Like, how is it used? And then get to a prediction and we're like, no.
Okay.
Because then, like, if you have customers and then they're just, like, even from weekdays, yeah, then you have a public holiday, you're in multiple markets, there could be regional differences, and so on. So that's pretty hard.
All right. I'm going to think about that. Thank you.
Okay, I think the FQA session came to an end. Thank you, Ben, for your nice talk. Observability is just contextualized monitoring. A big applause to Ben. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you.